always love you.
Welcome everyone to Xena Noobers Podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 87. This podcast shows for all the Xena and Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So hi everyone, welcome back to another XNU show. I hope everyone is doing well. Myself and I are doing fine. I'm actually doing quite well. It is extremely, extremely hot, which, as most of you know, that I'm on the other side of the world, so when most of northern United States is in their cold spell and several other countries, we on this side of the world are sweating our you-know-whats off. So I am in the process of sweating, and yuck. Can that's always a yuck. I don't mind sweating when I'm doing physical activity, but when I'm just sitting at a desk, okay, can we just say vile? Thank God for air conditioners. That's all I can say. But we're doing great. I am back up and running. Thank you, Jesus. I'm back up to my running. Not up to 100% of my running mileage. I'm just shy for about, I would say maybe half a mile. So it's all good. It's getting there. I just have to go back gradually to do it. But now I've got to figure out why my knees don't want to agree with me. So, I figured that's why I gave myself a year for this training for the marathon. So that if all my body parts were going to fall apart and fall off, I could get them crazy glued back on in time for the marathon. And that's just a subtle hint for everybody out there so that when the time comes, I will be putting up a fundraiser on my Blogspot with links and everything and asking for everybody to dig deep and raise funds. It will go towards a charity. I have not decided which one it will be yet, whether it will be Live Strong, which is the Lance Armstrong Cancer Fund charity, or the Juvenile Diabetes Cancer Council, or even the Starship. I don't know yet. It all depends on what information I can gather, and just to make sure that all the criteria are met and I can qualify for them. So I'm just putting that in your heads now. So it's just under a year by a few days, but you're well advised and warned. So let's rock on with the show. The song this week is Enigma's Voyager. No one sent in any song dedications or announcements or suggestions, so I had to go hunt myself. Oh, woe is me, little hand and wrist to the forehead. Not. So that's what the song is, and on with the show. Okay, by the friendly turning of our pages, we can tell that it's time for the book review. And in this week's book review, sent in by my book wench, Heather, thank you, Heather, we have a shapeshifter romance. It's called Second Nature by Jae, J-A-E, and I'll have a link on my show notes. And it's available on ebook, audio, ebook, and paperback. And it says, novelist Jory Price doesn't believe in the existence of shape-shifting creatures or true love. She leads a solitary life, and the paranormal romances she writes are pure fiction for her. Griffin Westmore knows better, at least about one of these two things. She doesn't believe in love either, but she's one of the not-so-fictional shapeshifters. She's also a Saru, an elite soldier, investigator, and if need be, an assassin with the mission to protect the shapeshifter's secret existence at any cost. When Jory gets too close to the truth in her latest shapeshifter romance, Griffin is sent to investigate, and if necessary, to destroy the manuscript before it's published and to kill the writer. So thank you, And on with the show. Okay, in our movie review this week, sent in by my movie wench. Oh, I love having wenches all over the place. My movie wench, Pam, sends in the movie Love My Life. It is a sweet coming-of-age, coming-out story of two young university students from Japan who find each other and fall in love. We watch as Iri and Ichiko navigate their identities and how best to reveal themselves to family, friends, the culture and society in which they live. Each step in their process has a kind of domino effect, and as a result, long-hidden secrets are revealed. Honesty, hope, and love prevail. Come on, who doesn't save a story like that? You can see it on the review of lesbianlife.about.com, and I'll have a link on my show notes. It is a film with English subtitles, and you can find the trailers of the movie on YouTube. Video is also available through Wolf Video. Okay, over in the official Lucy Lawless fan club site, we have a message on from Lucy's blog, and it's dated on the 18th, and it says, "Wow, it was fascinating to be shot down in Chinatown by New Zealand's PM. I showed up at Parliament with Dr. Jim Salinger to present our Prime Minister, John Key, the money raised in traditional Kiwi form, dollar by dollar, at cake stalls and sausage sizzles in order to purchase him a ticket to Copenhagen for the World Summit on Climate Change. He declined to come down to meet us. Well, the man is running a country after all. Plus, the farmers are screaming at him over the proposed emissions trading scheme. Plus, China is breathing heavily down his neck, and not in a loving way, about the Dalai Lama's trip here. It was a tough day for the PM, and I imagine we were just the icing on the cake. John Key has great leadership skills, is smart, and immensely popular. We need him in Copenhagen to show our good faith in this critical world summit on climate change. I see our cousins in Australia, who fought beside us in two wars and who are our most valued training partners, frying in heat wave after heat wave in its only spring. How can we ignore their plight? If Kevin Rudd will attend the December 14th summit, it would be an awful slight to our erstwhile brothers in arms. Our Prime Minister must go to Copenhagen. Lucy." So that's Lucy's blog's message, and over on the official Lucy Lawless fan club site. A Matter of Pride, Part 7, by Melissa Good. She knew it couldn't last forever. Gabrielle sucked on the end of a quill, aware of the slow movement of Zena's hand over her thigh. The warrior had figured out one of her new puzzles, had some breakfast, taken a short nap, all while Gabrielle worked on her diary. Now, Zena was awake, and the bard could almost feel the restlessness coming from her. Not a lot, just yet, but definite, distinctive shifts of the warrior's long body, which was curled around Gabrielle's as the bard sat there writing. Dory was the same way, Gabrielle acknowledged in amused silence. The baby would allow things to occupy her for only so long, before her attention would wander, and she would be off to find something more interesting to do. It was funny, in a way. Usually she didn't think too much about Dory's unusual parentage. But at times, like this, when she saw Zena so clearly in her daughter, it brought the miracle of it home to her all over again. She leaned back, enjoying the comfortable warmth of her living backrest, and draped an arm over Zena's hip. One of the warrior's long legs was hitched forward, the other was extended due to its splint.
"Want me to change that bandage, hun?"
Zena had her head propped up on one fist. "Yeah." Her body shifted slightly. "I was thinking of going over there and working things out a little." Gabrielle suppressed a grin.
"Over where? Near the wall there?"
Zena nodded. "Yeah, just warm up my body a bit.
Bored?"
"No." Gabrielle chuckled.
"Okay, restless."
"Maybe it's the weather." Gabrielle closed her diary and set the quill down.
"Come here. Let me look at you. Eek!"
The bard found herself unexpectedly turned upside down, her limbs tangling with Zena's, ending up with both of them nose to nose and wrapped up in linen.
"Ah!"
"So,
Xena nibbled on the soft skin just under Gabriel's jaw.
Here I am.
She caught the bard's earlobe between her teeth.
How do I look?
Well. Gabriel pulled the lace free and peeled back the linen covering the warrior's shoulder. It was one way to keep her in bed.
Gorgeous,
she breathed, sending eager fingers under the shift to explore the warm skin beneath it. Her body rested and relaxed, now woke up in a hurry, responding to the jolt of desire Xena's lips were igniting inside of her. Somehow, her shift disappeared. The cool, moist air coming in the window felt good against her heated skin, and she felt goosebumps rise all up and down her back as Xena rolled her over and leaned on both arms above her for a moment, gazing down at her with a seductive, predatory look.
I think I'm in trouble,
Gabriel murmured as her long body sank to brush against hers.
Yes, you are.
Xena purred in one ear. The bard gave her hands permission to wander and pressed her fingers lightly against the warrior's frame before she stroked gently downward. Xena's ribs expanded towards her, and she felt the chill breath of the air tickle her bare belly just before the heat of the warrior's skin banished it explosively. Soft growls distracted her, and she left her hands to continue their wandering as she concentrated on the lips that were moving down her collarbone in a series of licks and gentle kisses, pausing to pay special attention to her most sensitive places and wringing an inarticulate sound from her throat. Xena chuckled, her breath warming the skin underneath her, and continued her efforts, rewarded with a low, deep sound and the sudden clenching of Gabriel's fingers against her side.
Like that, huh?
Oh, yeah,
the bard answered on a very uneven breath.
Do it again.
Another laugh. This one was rich with affection.
Whatever you say, my queen.
Xena did as she was asked, feeling Gabriel's body lift and arch against hers as the bard gripped her and pulled her closer. The warrior nipped a little harder, and was glad, for Gabrielle's sake, that the walls were very thick stone. She only wished for a moment that her ears weren't quite so close or so sensitive. Xena lifted her head at the soft knock on the door, resenting the need for her to stir from the lazy, tumbled nest she and Gabrielle had burrowed into after they'd tired each other out. She really didn't feel like moving. Her body was sated and very comfortable. The restlessness had started to make her itchy was completely gone, replaced by a sleepy sensuality that made her want to just close her eyes again and put her head down on Gabriel's belly while her fingers traced slowly, lazy patterns across the bard's soft inner thigh. Another knock. Xena glared at the door and took in a breath.
What?
She projected a dangerous growl towards the door, sounding echoes of a certain warlord in days of not long past.
Better be worth your life if you knock again,
she added for good measure.
Silence.
Xena waited, then grinned as she heard footsteps retreating into muffled obscurity. With a contented sigh, she resumed her spot. Her eyes closed as she felt Gabrielle's fingers touch her neck, scratching it and kneading the muscles at the top of her spine.
That could have been someone with something important to tell us, you know,
the bard murmured.
Don't care,
Xena responded.
Whatever it is, can wait.
Gabriel only wished she could stir up the energy to continue the protest. Instead, she started tracing the powerful ridge that ran down either side of her partner's spine. It wasn't often in their busy lives that they took a day out like this and indulged in each other. In Amphipolis, certainly, it would be fairly impossible given their responsibilities. And while a games compound in Athens wasn't exactly the most relaxed, romantic place she could imagine, still, it was raining and it was quiet, mostly. They had an acceptably comfortable bed, and each other. What more, really, could she ask for? Gabrielle benignly eyed still-driving rain outside.
Hey, maybe it'll keep raining and they'll have to postpone the games.
A pale blue eye appeared as Xena turned her head and peered up over the curve of the bard's breast.
You want to stay in Athens longer?
The warrior asked in an incredulous tone.
No.
Gabrielle rifled her fingers through the warrior's bangs.
But I do want to see you go out there and kick the attitude off of some of those...
She paused.
Walking fertilizer piles?
No. Fertilizer is useful.
Gabriel frowned.
I'll think of something later.
Xena seemed satisfied with that. Her eyes closed again, though she squirmed around so she was now facing the bard.
split nostrils.
What?
Gabrielle said. That animal you were describing. Split nostrils?
What animal?
The bard asked, then almost slapped her head in memory.
Oh, that animal.
She had truly forgotten the game for a minute.
Split nostrils? Sina, I have no idea. I never got that close to it.
Ah. The eye appeared again, sparkling with mischief. So it's something you've personally have seen.
Rat. Yes.
Before or after?
Where would I have seen something like that in Potidea, Sina?
Gabrielle admitted, acknowledging the fact that giving that up meant she told Sina that Sina had, in all probability, seen the thing too.
Ah.
Sina wiggled her fingers, coincidentally tickling Gabrielle's belly.
Was it cute?
In whose opinion?
Yours.
Yes.
Damn, that opens up the possibilities.
Gabrielle started laughing.
We've got to find real shelter!
Effany yelled, keeping her grip on the lead horse's headstall with difficulty. The animal was afraid, plowing through muddy, racing water up to its knees, and only the fact that he and his partner in harness had an Amazon latched on either side of them was keeping them from bolting.
I know, but where?
Pony yelled back, wrestling with the other horse.
F, we're losing ground here!
They'd been caught by a rush of water, a flash flood that came down the road leading up to Athens, overrunning the edges of the stone-lined way as the walls started to slope upwards, forcing people to keep to it. It was chaos. They'd already been stuck by debris washing down from further up the road, and seen bodies floating by. The wagon was half adrift already, despite the weight of the frightened elders and their supplies. Effany was seriously afraid now that they'd lose it all, and she knew if they lost their footing, no one's safety was guaranteed. Cyrene was perched over the driver's seat. Dory latched to her back, a grim, desperate look on her face, as she balanced with difficulty, trying to keep the other villagers calm. Johan had joined them by the horses, his sturdy form just in back of Kate's stubborn lightness, keeping the girl from tearing loose in the flood.
"Can we go back down the road? Follow the flow?"
Pony asked. Effany looked back that way. The road had disappeared, replaced by churning, brown nightmare full of anonymous tumbling debris. They were huddled by one of the sloping banks where the flow was less, and she was afraid moving out into the current would be disaster. Staying where they were, being battered by everything that came at them, was a disaster. Moving forward was damn near impossible. Effany freed a hand to wipe her drenched curly hair out of her eyes. Being in charge really sucked sometimes.
"All right," she yelled. "Let's see if we can turn the team around," she pointed. "And Kate, get the Hades up into that wagon!"
Kate was already losing the battle with her water.
"Bother that!"
She glared at the flow, which was lifting her off her feet.
"It's not fair!"
Palladia edged around in back of her and grabbed her around the waist.
"Would you just get up there? You're gonna float your butt away and end up getting your head cracked."
"Ha!"
Kate squirmed around.
"Rather close on your getting yours cracked for grabbing me without warning first."
Palladia rolled her eyes.
"Oh, all right."
Kate grabbed the harness lying across the second horse on the driver's side and pulled herself up, slinging one leg over the animal's back and taking a tight hold.
"There, now go do something useful with yourself, won't you?"
She gave Palladia a sudden shove.
"Jump!"
"What? Ow!"
Palladia yelped as an uprooted trunk slammed into her legs.
"Son of a—"
"Bother!"
Kate gave her an exasperated look.
"You never do listen."
"Come on!" Effany and Eppin turned into the current, side by side. They both moved cautiously, feeling for the road's surface, as they pulled the unwilling horses around and edged cautiously into the flow. Effany felt her boot slip, and she cursed, then found her arm being gripped and her balance steadied.
"Thanks."
She gave Pony a grateful look. The weapons master had slipped between the two front horses, along with Johan. Palladia was hanging grimly on the other front horse, her height and weight denying the water and allowing her to gain headway against the flow. The horses didn't want to cooperate. The water frightened them, and the roaring sound was making them shy repeatedly, pulling against the Amazons and Johan and becoming almost uncontrollable. Effany hung grimly onto the check piece and pulled with all her strength, using her weight to turn the animal's head and force him around,
Come on, you!
The horse reared, taking her up with it. She felt her feet leave the ground, and she wrenched herself in midair, throwing her body towards the middle of the road and slamming into the horse's neck. With a scream, the animal dropped back down and lunged into the middle of the road, taking his partner with him. Effie lost her footing and hung on, feeling debris slam painfully against her legs. One hand slipped free of its grip, and she took a deep breath, judging her chances in the now increasing flood. The rain obscured the wagon, and she thought she heard a yell, then a high-pitched noise. Then suddenly the back of her leathers was grabbed and she was pulled sharply against the horse's side.
Ow!
It knocked the breath out of her, but she got a chance to regain her grip, and by sheer force of will, shoved her boots down and found footing. Only then did she turn her head to find Kate leaning over the lead horse's neck, still gripping her tightly.
Good catch!
She complimented the young Amazon.
Rather!
Kate replied calmly.
Can't be losing you, Your Majesty. I'd hate to have to explain that to the Queen.
Effany almost laughed. Then she shook her head and inched back through the quickening water and started leading the horse forward again.
Come on, you blockhead! You can't stay here!
Slowly, they moved forward, feeling the frightening sway as the wagon was dragged into the deepest part of the water and almost lifted up. The horse struggled, slipping and lunging sideways, and for a moment, Effany thought they'd lost. Then the wagon turned all the way, and they were facing downstream, feeling the shove against their backs as the water surged around them. Then they heard a scream. Effany whipped her head around and looked back, over the shuddering wagon. Through the driving rain, she could just see something very large, heading right for them. She barely had enough time to yell,
"Hang on!"
The impact struck them. Effany heard a splintering and felt a huge jolt as her grip was torn loose and she was sent flying, aware of the overwhelming scent of earth just before her body crashed into the slope. She reached out blindly and grabbed hold of the first thing she felt, sharp branches cutting into her palms as the water swept her past it. The branch held and she pulled her head up, shaking her hair out of her eyes as she stared down the road, seeing nothing but a tangle of wreckage and flailing limbs moving slowly away from her. With a curse, she flung herself into the water and plunged after them, fighting to keep her balance against the current. The rain lashed against her scraped and battered body, but that meant nothing to her as she focused on the dimly seeing bodies bobbing downstream. Just then, the overturned wagon caught in a narrow point in the road and stuck. The roar of the water redoubled as it raged against the blockade, but it gave Effany precious time to reach the wreck. She pulled herself on top of it, crouching as she leapt to the front and stood crouching in the rain, shading her eyes from the worst of it.
Pony! Here!
A very welcomed yell came back.
Where left?
Effany glanced behind her, to see the water rapidly backing up behind the wagon. She jumped to the right side of the cart and leapt down, stumbling through the now only ankle-high flow to where a huddle of bodies were. Pony was standing spraddle-legged over two of the elders, apparently either winded or injured. Joan had pulled Cyrene up into the slim embankment and was holding her there in safety, both of them pale and shaken. The rest of the elders were huddled next to them. There was no sign of Kate or Palladia, or the team of horses. Effany's heart sank.
Lost a couple,
she exhaled, her eyes going briefly to Cyrene's back pouch, where Dory's head was visible, the baby seemingly oblivious to the rain.
Dory okay?
She's fine,
Cyrene said.
I saw Kate and Palladia go with the horses,
she hesitated.
I'm sure they're okay.
The Amazon regent felt the rain redouble, pelting her back with stinging force. She put a hand out against the wagon to steady herself as she took stock of the situation. The dam wouldn't hold forever, that was one thing. Her eyes met Pony's. They had injured people now to tend to, that was another. They had no wagon, no supplies, no horses, had two missing Amazons, injured elders, and it was still raining. Effany rubbed her temples with one hand.
You know what? She commented to the driving rain. I wish Gabrielle were here. Then at least have someone to blame this all on.
What was that?
pony yelled,
"Can't hear you, F!"
A sigh. "I said let's take advantage of this damn wagon being stuck and get everyone off the road and up to the embankment. We'll assess the injured, and then make some shelter." She saw the grim understanding in her partner's eyes.
"Then we'll look for Kate and Palladia."
Pony frowned.
"Come on,"
Effany ordered with quiet inflexibility.
"This wagon's going to give. We've got to get these people clear."
She dropped to her knees next to the injured elder, drawing in a breath when she realized it was Jocelyn. A piece of debris had run him through his right shoulder, and as she turned him over, his blood splashed over her legs, turning the muddied water dirty crimson. She had only time to meet his eyes before they fluttered close, and the body in her hands went limp, slumping against her with a weary finality that shocked even her experienced mind. Into the utter, shocked silence around her, Effany released a quiet, shaking sigh, her fingers merely confirming what her instincts already had told her.
"He's dead," she stated. "Eponin, help me pull his body clear."
Pony knelt in instant obedience, and they lifted the old man's body up together, starting for the embankment, trailing drops of darkened blood behind them. It was dark outside and still raining. Gabrielle had lit the candles inside the room, and they provided a warm, golden light that turned the stone walls cream tone and gave her enough illumination for her current task. Zena was lying on her back with her eyes closed and her hands folded over her stomach, allowing the bard to fuss over her injured knee. The warrior's breathing was slow and even, and if Gabrielle didn't know better, she'd almost think Zena was asleep. Carefully, the bard cut loose the linen bandages holding the splint in place and removed the 3 hour shafts, setting them aside for reuse. Then she unwrapped the limb, which was propped up in her lap so she could reach around it. Gabrielle murmured in a pleased tone as she uncovered the ugly gash on the top of her partner's knee and found it well on the way to healing. The skin was closed and knit together, with no sign of infection or redness. Also, the swelling around the joint had gone down drastically, returning the warrior's leg to a more customary profile. Gabrielle could see the lines of bone and muscle now under skin, no longer so puffed and bruised, and it appeared to her that the broken kneecap seemed to be still in place and healing. Zena's magic. Gabrielle traced the skin with gentle fingers, and she glanced up at the length of her partner's body. "No, Gabrielle," her conscience corrected her quietly. "Call it what it is, the blood of the gods that runs in her. The immortal touch that lets her do the impossible things she does, and keeps her whole, and allows her to bend the rules of the mortal world for herself and for you." "Not too much," she acknowledged. "Not enough to turn away pain or keep her blood from shedding. Not enough to hold back the years or prevent the tiny lines from lining the tanned skin of her face. Just enough to put her back together, to let her continue the long fight that let her keep hold of life beyond the grip of the rest of humanity. Just enough to give them Dory."
"Well?"
Zena's voice interrupted her musing.
"Is it about to fall off or something?"
Gabrielle chuckled softly.
"Not hardly."
She squeezed the extra water out of the piece of linen in her right hand, then started washing off the dried blood.
"It actually looks like your leg now, not like something from Deidre's butcher shop back home."
"Ah."
Zena smiled, keeping her eyes closed.
"Yeah. It feels a lot better."
She flexed the leg a bit, the muscles bunching and rolling under the skin.
"Good."
"Yeah."
Gabrielle wiped the skin clean, removing the old herbs and dried salve.
"How about I finish up and have Micah scrounge us up some dinner?"
"Good idea,"
Zena replied promptly.
"He's been out there all day. Should have a wagon load of news and gossip for us."
"Assuming he hasn't run for the hills when you yelled before,"
Gabrielle countered. Zena snorted softly.
"Big bad Zena."
Pink tongue appeared, pointed in the barge direction.
"Meanie."
"Oh, yeah. Remind me of that next time Dory's jumping all over me,"
Zena reminded her. "I've had my reputation torn to such tatters." A melodramatic sigh.
"It's Zena. Warm your cream puff now."
Gabrielle rolled her eyes and snorted.
"Tell me another one, you poor old thing,"
she drawled.
"Wait. Is this where I get to hear how it used to be back in the days where you had to milk cows one teat at a time?
Listen, Landchop, Xena growled. Watch it, or I'll show you what we're used to do with cows.
She suddenly found the light blocked out and Gabrielle's slim form looming over her as the bard leaned forward to kiss her.
Who are you calling Landchop?
Gabrielle asked lazily, rubbing noses with the warrior as they paused for breath.
You making fun of me for being a shepherd's kid?
Nah,
Xena bowed softly. Would I do that?
Uh-huh.
The bard grinned at her.
I still remember that short enough to milk sheep joke you told last time.
Xena started laughing in pure reflex.
I have you know, I was the best sheep milker in Podatia, as a matter of fact.
Gabrielle went on, enjoying the expression of simple happiness on her partner's face.
The trick is, you turn them over.
Xena just laughed harder.
Then you hop up and down on them.
Gabrielle hopped just a little. The effect was, given her position, structurally hilarious. Parts of her anatomy bounced off of Xena's and nearly made the warrior choke.
The tough part,
she leaned closer to Xena's ear,
is putting the buckets in just the right places.
God!
Xena covered her eyes with one hand, her entire body shaking.
Stop it! You're making my stomach hurt from laughing.
Gabrielle chuckled a little herself, then exhaled, and let her forehead rest against Xena's.
Z?
Her laughter winding down, the warrior released a breath and opened her eyes.
Yeah.
You know something?
I do now. How to milk a sheep.
Xena joked, making them both chuckle again.
No, what?
She added after a minute. Gabrielle gazed down into her eyes, seeing past God's blood and the ultimate warrior and the merciless killer down through the simple innkeeper's daughter, who was her partner, her soulmate, and her best friend.
I love you.
Xena's expression softened.
I love you too.
She replied with a tiny charmed smile. What brought that on?
Nothing.
Gabrielle leaned over and kissed her.
Everything.
She added with a satisfied sigh.
Life rocks.
Xena studied the look of contented joy in Gabrielle's face and found herself smiling in reaction to it, knowing she'd play a large part putting it there. She thought about that statement for a moment, then surprised herself by finding she was in complete agreement with it, at least for the moment.
Yeah, it does.
The candles flickered contentedly, burning low over a sweetly peaceful scene.
Well,
Kate wrung her hair out, giving the muddy bank they'd climb up a dirty look.
That certainly wasn't a terribly wonderful way to spend a bit of time.
No.
Palladia was sitting on the ground, examining a long, ragged gash in her leg.
It sucked.
She looked back over her shoulder to where the road swept around a bend and out of their sight.
Figures the rest of them are taking their time.
Kate sighed and climbed up onto the nearby boulder, shading her eyes, peering off into the distance. Then she cocked her head and listened intently.
Rats,
she finally muttered.
Pally, I don't think they're coming.
No?
Palladia scrambled awkwardly to her feet and limped over to lean on the rocks.
Hey, great.
Great?
The blonde girl frowned.
Whatever do you mean by that? It's not in the slightest bit great. They're probably stuck back in the water somewhere, waiting for us to rescue them,
Kate said.
So, come on then, and let's get at it.
She hopped off the rock and picked her way across the stony embankment, towards the water. Palladia gazed plaintively at the sky, then shook her head.
Yo, dipwad!
She sat down on the rock.
You can't go back that way!
Kate paused, about to enter the water. She turned and put her hands on her narrow hips.
Why ever not?
Palladia pointed.
That water was knocking you on your ass up there with four horses and a scat of people hanging on to you, she snorted. You're just gonna get blasted right back here.
Kate reviewed the rushing water, whose force seemed to have lessened, but which was still formidable.
You could go first.
Why should I?
The taller Amazon protested.
So the damn rocks can crack me in the head? No thanks.
Kate turned around and made her way back, ending up right next to her friend.
Now, you look here, she stated firmly. Stop being such a sissy at once, or I shall have thump you.
Palladia sighed. It was Goofy. Here she was, 3 times Kate's size, and that little brat thought she could just run over her like a runaway mule. She glowered up at her as the blonde girl folded her slim but muscular arms across her chest. Problem was, Kate could probably drag her butt down into the water size, or no size, and they both knew it.
Goofy. Why not go up there?
Palladia pointed towards the ridge.
Unless you gotta do everything the hard way.
Kate turned her head and reviewed the suggested alternate seriously.
All right, she nodded. Splendid idea. Let's go.
She tangled one hand in Palladia's leathers and started off, giving the taller woman a choice of following her or remaining seated in perfect nakedness. She hated that. With a groan, Palladia got up and trudged after her smaller companion, trying not to limp or bleed too much.
All right, cut it out. I'm coming.
Right.
Kate slowed her pace and found a relatively smooth path up to the ridge.
Is that leg of yours awful?
No.
Right.
Kate turned around and gave her a push, landing Palladia neatly on the short, tough grass of the embankment.
Give it here.
She popped down onto the turf with little ceremony, yanking the bigger woman's calf towards her.
Hey!
Palladia objected, pulling her foot back.
Cut that out! I said it was fine!
Yes, but you lied all the same.
Kate ignored her protest and trapped the limb between her ankles, holding it down.
Now, be still, or I'll cut the silly thing right off.
Palladia leaned back on her elbows and tried to ignore the driving rain, pelting her from all sides. It washed the mud off, at least, and it even sort of got Kate's hair back to its normal color, more or less like Palladia's own. They had little things like that in common. Their eyes were sort of the same color, too.
I'll have to stitch this,
Palladia groaned.
Not those frickin' square knots again, okay?
She had a rather odd-looking scar on one arm from Kate's experimentation with needles.
It's not my fault. You can't keep out of the way of things,
Kate stated placidly as she drew her needle and bit of gut.
I get bored doing just those straight ones all the time.
You're so weird.
I'm certainly not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. Now be quiet, or I'll stitch my name across your kneecap.
Palladia laid down on the slope and closed her eyes, glad of a chance to rest at least. The day had totally sucked so far, and if she had to put up Kate jamming a sharp needle into her leg, at least she could relax during it. Besides, there were worse people she could have doing it, like Eponin.
Hey.
I said...
Yeah, yeah. The big Amazon waved a hand.
I know, but listen. You figure those guys got out of this stupid flood to cover?
Kate bent her head, keeping the rain off the skin she was working on.
How on earth should I know?
She answered, taking careful, small stitches in the hand's breadth long gash, leaking tendrils of her friend's blood over both of them.
Yeah, like they have the sense to get out of the rain,
Palladia muttered.
Hello, Lady Kettle? Seen what's pouring on your head lately?
Kate snickered.
Good gosh, Pally. What put you in such a bother today?
It's raining. My leg hurts. You're jabbing me with a needle. We're lying in the mud. It's lightning. The idiots we're with are probably inside a cave with a fire ready.
I'm thirsty,
Palladia answered dourly, then yelped when a finger hooked itself between her teeth and yanked her mouth open. Rain immediately entered it.
There.
Kate went back to her task.
Anything else, then?
Palladia swallowed her mouthful of water and considered the option.
A dry bed?
She felt a single last sharp pinch against her skin, then felt the pressure as Kate sprawled on her wet grass next to her. She hazarded a peek to see those strange, often cold eyes watching her.
What?
You know, I've quite decided having all those elders with us is a bother, Kate said. Puts a damper on things.
Palladia smirked a little.
Yeah. Don't want to shock the old goats, though. Might send those amphibious fishies to a tiz.
A twinkle entered Kate's eyes.
Actually,
she drawled softly,
I was thinking about the region in Eponin.
She gave the edge of Palladia's leathers a tug.
Do you know they've never tried having fun in a tree?
A sigh.
Most normal people haven't, doofball.
The big Amazon snorted, visibly pleased nonetheless.
They're like not into breaking their necks.
Or taking unnecessary risks, Kate added, leaning over and biting a fold of her friend's skin.
I can't imagine why not.
She looked up from under very blonde lashes.
I'm glad you're not normal.
Pleiadia's nostrils flared.
Thanks, she remarked. Glad being nutty as a fruitcake gets points.
Kate chuckled, then pushed herself off the grass and held the hand out to her.
Come on, then. Let's go find those slackards.
She hauled her friend up, and they started up the slope again. The rain beat against them, but its force wasn't nearly that of the raging water below, and they made good time across the ridge.
Where in the Hades did you get the idea of trees, anyway?
Pleiadia suddenly asked.
Where'd you think?
Kate replied smugly.
Rolled eyes. Figures.
Never catch them being boring. What?
Kate giggled.
After all, that's how they managed Dory.
She kept walking a few steps, then turned as she realized Pleiadia was no longer at her side.
Do get on, Pally. What are you standing there for?
A tree caused that?
Pleiadia had her hands on her hips.
A frickin' tree? And we've been...
She spluttered to a halt.
Are you nuts? You want to end up beggars?
Me?
Kate pointed at her own chest.
Goodness, no!
Pleiadia walked up to her.
Damn good thing.
I figured you'd be much better at that sort of thing,
Kate replied calmly, giving her a prod in the belly.
You've got quite a lot more room for starts.
She turned and ambled off, leaving the tall Amazon rooted in place, staring at her, slack-jawed.
Why, you little buckeye,
Pleiadia managed to get out.
Don't you even... Hey! Hey!
Ignoring the ache in her leg, she broke into a run after Kate.
Hey! Get back here! You!
A mischievous chuckle floated back to her. It wasn't perfect, but it was shelter. Effany rose from a crouch near the half-unhinged door and looked around her. The old shrine was so weather-beaten and worn, it was impossible to tell which god it had once honored. The roof was sound, though, and the walls kept out most of the rain, and the building was on a rise above the road. It was the best they could have hoped for. In one corner, a long unused fire pit had been brought back to life by Serene, who was kneeling next to it. Effany could see the strain the long journey was taking on the older woman, but true to form, Serene plugged on in silence, pushing the silver-streaked dark hair back from her eyes. Near the entrance, covered in one of the tarps Effany had been carrying in her pack, lay Jocelyn's still form. Effany felt a quiet sense of guilt every time she looked at him, even though she hadn't had any say in the planning of the trip or in accepting responsibility for the members of the party. She knew Xena and Gabrielle wouldn't blame her for this. Effany wiped the mud off of her hands with a studied, deliberate motion, but nothing could keep her from blaming herself, since, like it or not, being in charge came with the region of Amazon's necklace and the ranked badges she wore proudly depending from her shoulder. A hand touched her back, and she looked up to find Pony there, her honey-colored eyes, glinting with quiet compassion, set in a mud-bespattered face. With a grunt, the weapons matron knelt next to her.
Good luck finding that old wood in here.
Effany agreed.
Want me to get those cuts on your back?
Effany realized she hadn't even known she had any.
Nah, I'm fine, she murmured. How are they doing?
She jerked her chin towards the elders, who were seated against the opposite wall in an inexhaustible huddle. Eponin shrugged one shoulder.
Not good, she replied. Just that one broken arm, but they're all...
She hesitated,
and Jock's wife's pretty shattered.
Effany slowly sat down on the hard stone floor, sitting cross-legged with her elbows braced on her thighs. A flash of memory invaded her tired mind of a forest in Thessaly. Yells of rage. Arrows. Fontes desperately standing between a war and her, and dying.
Yeah,
she exhaled. It's hard when it happens so fast. She stared sightlessly across the ruined temple. The change is so sudden. You go from being one pair to alone, and it just shocks you. Eponin eyed her uncertainly, then set her pack down and removed a square of linen and some cleaner, and went to work on the region's scraped back. She moved Effany's curls out of the way and saw her head drop forward just a little.
I remember when Gabrielle came to us that time, she said quietly.
First time or second? Effany murmured.
First, her partner responded. After she decided to take the mask, I went to go find her, to bring her over to the ceremonial hut for her gear. I found her in the hut we put the sarcophagus in, you know?
Effany nodded.
I know.
I thought I'd, you know, just try to, and I don't know. I just wanted to make her feel better about something. Anything.
Pony stumbled through the words.
So I told her I knew it was tough, you know, but that it'd be okay eventually, and she'd be happy again.
Effany turned her head and smiled a little.
That was sweet, Pone.
The weapons master shook her head.
She told me that I was half right.
Eponin said.
She said, yeah, it would be okay eventually.
Effany closed her eyes.
I felt for that poor kid, she whispered.
Vantes and I, we had our time together. Josk and his wife. Decades, she said.
Gabrielle, then, had lost the greatest love of her life, and she didn't even know it yet. Think that's why Xena came back?
Absolutely. The Regent smiled sadly. You don't know how much I envied Gabrielle that day.
Pony didn't answer. She just kept cleaning the jagged scrapes.
But I was a lot luckier than she is, you know. I realized that later on.
Effany continued softly.
You would have been all the way right if you said that to me.
Eponin gazed at her back with wide, round eyes full of unexpected wonder for a long moment. Then she circled her partner's shoulders with both arms and gave her a careful, quick hug.
Don't blame yourself for what happened, Eff, she whispered. You couldn't have stopped it, and you couldn't have made these stubborn mule heads stay in Amphipolis, even if you had been there at the start.
Effany let her head rest against Pony's.
Yeah, I know, she sighed. Doesn't help. Come on, let's go see if we can give Cyrene a hand. She looks wiped.
She shoved herself to her feet.
Thanks for the first aid. Anytime.
Pony shoved her supplies away and followed her partner over to the fledging fire. Cyrene was sitting next to it, with Dory cradled in her arms, the toddler happily sucking on a piece of dried fruit.
I think we need Plan B.
Cyrene glanced up to them.
So do I,
she replied.
Sit down, let's talk.
Bah!
Dory added, spitting a piece of fruit at them.
Who was in charge?
Effany Riley mused as she held her water-wrinkled hands to the fire and hoped this meant the worst was over. It was still raining. Xena burrowed out from under the covers and rested her chin on her forearm, regarding the sheeted silver passing by the window. Gabrielle had gotten dressed and gone out exploring, with the goal of getting them some dinner and seeing what was going on in mind. Xena considered her options. She could remain where she was, adhering to her promise to Gabrielle of staying in bed and relaxing, or she could get up and work off some of that energy that was starting to once again make her twitch. Well, with a sigh, the warrior rolled over and shed her fur covering, then sat up and rested her feet on the floor. She had been good, after all, almost all day. Gabrielle would forgive her, right? With a soft grunt, she pushed herself up onto her good leg and waited for the balance to settle, then leaned against the wall with one hand as she very cautiously rested her bad leg on the ground. She had been good, after all, almost all day. Gabrielle would forgive her, right? With a soft grunt, she pushed herself up onto her good leg and waited for her balance to settle, then leaned against the wall with one hand as she very cautiously rested her bad leg on the ground. So far, so good. She tensed her thigh muscles and slowly, carefully, let a bit of weight down.
Ow!
She paused and waited. After a moment, the pain subsided, and she continued her experiment, until the ache jacked up again and steadied. The warrior frowned. Not good, but not entirely bad either. If she did the sensible thing, kept off her feet for another night, it might be all right. On the other hand, ignoring the restlessness for much longer wasn't going to be easy. Xena chewed her lower lip and regarded the room. Ah. She limped over to where the rocks and slabs were and studied them. There was one waist-high piece
obviously meant to practice vaulting over. She sat on it and looked right and left. There were two more posts on either side. Markers were warming up, pitch either spears or discus. The top of the posts were curved, meant to fit. Xena's eyes flicked to the ground. Aha! She got up and limped over to the long, very heavy-looking stone post lying on the ground. Her fingers drummed on her thigh. Kneeling to pick the thing up properly wasn't an option, with her splint. Xena frowned. She could wait for Gabrielle to get back to help her, but... With a sigh, the warrior leaned over and got her hands around the post, then straightened, feeling the fierce strain on her back as she lifted the heavy stone, just barely balancing it as she turned and dropped it into place on the supports with a heartfelt groan. Xena, warrior imbecile. She eased between the post and the vaulting block and sat down again, bracing her upper thighs against the heavy stone.
That might work.
She very slowly and carefully leaned back, letting the post counterweight her body. She could feel the pull against her stomach muscles, and she spread her arms out to either side, intensifying the exertion. She extended all the way back, and she was almost parallel with the floor, then paused, holding the position. There was no strain on her lower legs at all, just on her thighs and her body. With a grunt, she reversed the motion and pulled herself upright.
All right.
Xena thought for a moment, then decided on a routine. She repeated the lean she'd just done, then rolled her body around in a slow circle, warming her muscles up and stretching out areas she hadn't used in a while. Once she'd done that to her satisfaction, she leaned over and scooped up one of the stones and repeated her exercise with that, using the extra weight to get a little bit more stretch out of her body. It was awkward, certainly. Using just her upper body was tough, and it put a lot of strain on the long muscles on either side of her back and torso. She was just used to being able to leverage with the powerful muscles in her legs, and she found herself quickly getting a little sore across her back and midriff from the exercise. With a faint scowl, she pulled herself upright and regarded the far wall, tossing the stone up and down in her hands. Then she let it drop to the ground and eased out from under the post, regarding the red, angry marks across the tops of her thighs dourly. Then she spotted the stack of discus, half hidden in an alcove near the window. She hopped over to them and retrieved the couple, then went back to her stone seat.
Might as well get in a little practice in.
Xena fit her fingers around the edge of one of the discuses and hefted it, then studied the walls across from her. With a twist of her body, she wound up, then lashed her arm in reverse, sending the discus flying from her to smash against the wall with a very satisfying crunch. Xena studied the mark on the stone, then picked up another discus.
Where'd you get that aim, huh? Broadside of a barn? Bet you couldn't hit the broadside of Argo standing right next to you.
Another disc spun, smacking into the wall at a higher angle. A chunk of rock trickled out in its wake.
Gotta do better than that.
Her sense of competition woke up, and as she saw marks much higher up and deeper in the wall surface, it wasn't easy. The length of the room was a challenge, and she couldn't use her entire body weight to get behind the throws. In fact, matching the upper marks might be darn near impossible. Xena grinned and flexed her hands. At least she had something to keep herself busy until Gabrielle got back. A toga felt odd, draped over her body. Gabrielle twitched at it for the nth time as she meandered along the long corridors in search of Micah, in search of food and drink, in search of... Gabrielle rounded a corner and found herself entering a large, stuffy room full of muscular men and women exercising, mostly nude. Eyes immediately fell on her. In search of trouble, apparently, and as usual, she found it.
Hi!
Gabrielle gave the nearest man a polite smile. He was lifting two huge sacks, one on each shoulder, squatting down with them, and standing up again in grunting rhythm. He glared at her and turned his head, pointedly ignoring her presence. Sweat dripped off his face and onto the straw-covered floor.
Nice.
Gabrielle exhaled, then squared her shoulder and incited her path through the psychopaths. She could see a large, arched doorway on the far side of the enclosure, and brief flickers of dim forms in serving clothes indicated it probably was at least one of her goals. She started through the room, edging past men wrestling, women wrestling, a pit where several bodies clashed with swords, and many individuals concentrating in silence, practicing jumping, leaping, throwing. It was exhausting just watching them. Gabriel eyed the exquisitely chiseled young bodies and had to seriously wonder about their chances. Everyone she saw looked very well trained and athletic, and certainly skilled at whatever it was they were doing.
"Hey!"
Gabriel stopped as a tall, sleekly muscled woman stepped in front of her, a challenging expression on her face.
"Yes?"
she piled mildly.
"Can I help you?"
The tall woman was dressed in an off-the-shoulder, sweat-covered tunic, belted with a well-made quiver strapped across her back. She carried a longbow, competently gripped in one hand, and now she rested its end on the straw as she regarded Gabrielle.
"So you're one of the ringers, huh?"
"Ringer,"
Gabrielle frowned.
"I'm not sure what you're talking about,"
she replied honestly, aware of the small group gathering around them.
"I'm just here for the same reason you are," she said, "to compete for my hometown."
A few people laughed.
"Yeah?"
the woman eyed her.
"Well, you don't think your being famous cuts any slack with any of us?"
A murmur of agreement rose up.
"Okay,"
Gabrielle agreed amiably.
"I don't really expect it to, so that's no great loss."
She edged to her right a little, clearing some space. Out of the corner of her eye, she spotted Micah peeking around the archway, then saw him disappear quickly.
"Then why wait until the last minute?" the woman countered, "sneaking in like that." "Yeah."
Gabrielle's sacklifting friend had joined in.
"Well, you know."
The bard deliberately found a barrel and perched on it.
"We didn't actually come to Athens for the games. We just came to talk to the council about our taxes, only..."
"Council's out of session,"
the man stated.
"Right,"
Gabrielle agreed.
"So, we heard maybe the games were the one way to do something about our assessments. So,"
a shrug,
"we entered."
The woman laughed. "So you just shut up and figured you'd have a chance. Do you know how long most of us have been getting ready for this?"
Gabrielle could well imagine.
"Guess you've got no problem then, right?"
She smiled, folding her hands on her lap.
"My problem is, I've been working my butt off to get here, practicing all day for a year, and only barely qualifying. Then you show up,"
the woman stated,
"and they just let you right in."
The bard stood and walked over to her.
"Well, you know, I spent the last year rebuilding my birthplace, which was totally destroyed,"
she paused,
"and helping hundreds of refugees find new homes. And the year before that, I spent fighting for survival and watching my friends and family murdered."
Pause.
"Want to trade?"
The woman took a breath, then stepped back a little. Gabrielle followed her, tilting her head up and meeting the woman's gaze.
"Get over yourself,"
she suggested, before she simply pushed by her and continued on her way, ignoring the silence and the watching eyes. Micah was waiting for her when she reached the exit, his still bruised face tense as she rounded the corner.
"Mistress!"
"There you are,"
the bard greeted him.
"Okay, listen."
"Shh!"
Micah pulled her arm anxiously.
"Over here, quickly!"
He took her to a darkened corner, eyeing the passing servants.
"Celesta's looking for you."
Gabrielle cocked her head.
"So?"
"She's put the word out. She's personally challenging you,"
the boy said.
"She said you're a fraud, and those stories in the library either are stolen or copied from somewhere."
Gabrielle stared at him for a moment, then burst into laughter.
"Oh, God!"
She covered her eyes with one hand.
"I only wish some of those stories were about someone else."
Her body sagged back against a cool stone wall.
"What a clueless dipwad."
Micah leaned against the wall next to her.
"She's lying, huh?"
The bard was quiet for a moment, then she looked at him.
"You believed her?"
His eyes studied her face intently.
"I hardly know you,"
he said after a moment.
"And I wondered, because you're so..."
A blonde eyebrow lifted.
"Young,"
Micah said, with a smile.
"Odd, coming from a kid like me, I guess."
He stared at his boots for a moment.
"But no, I didn't believe her."
Gabrielle gazed quietly off into the distance, trying to decide whether she'd feel amused, or insulted, or just disgusted.
"Well, tomorrow I guess we'll..."
A loud banging cut off her speech, and she turned to see four men entering the large room and mounting a small dais she hadn't noticed towards the front of it. The oldest of them beat a long, capped staff on the ground and waited for everyone to turn and look at him. Gabrielle pulled Micah with her as they slipped into the exercise room and pressed against the wall.
My dear athletes!
The man boomed. He was large and had salt and pepper hair with a long, almost silver beard.
The gods have played a trick, it seems.
He cleared his throat importantly.
Due to the weather, we have to postpone the opening of the games. Our soothsayer,
he turned and indicated, a slim, almost bald man behind him,
tells me the weather should clear by sundown on the morrow. Hence, we will begin the games at dawn on the next.
A low murmur rose up.
What of the tax deadline?
Gabriel's erstwhile challenger spoke up.
That will bring the end of the games past it.
The bearded man held up a hand.
Fear not. I'm sure we can work out something with the city council. I have sent word to the prefect.
Gabriel took note of the low comments around her.
Okay, well, that helps, she murmured to Micah. Sina needs all the time she can get. Listen, do they have sandwiches or something I can grab?
Micah led her back into the servants' area.
I was going to bring you both something, he told her. I tried before, but,
Sina scared you off.
Gabrielle suppressed a grin.
Yeah, she was, practicing some moves.
Oh.
He picked up a basket from a small alcove.
Well, I'm glad she's not like the rest of these people. I've had to listen to them all day long. What a bunch of egotists.
Gabrielle led the way back through the big room, which now held clumps of people gathered together, evidently teams discussing the news. They all gave her quick, suspicious looks as they passed, and one or two snide comments about Micah reached her ears. She glanced at the boy, whose eyes were on the ground, but the reddened tips of his ears indicated he'd heard them.
Sorry.
He glanced at her quickly.
Why? They're saying I'm your hired bedmate. It's what I do. You owe me no apology. Rather, I owe you one for making them think so.
He took a torch from the wall sconce and led the way through the halls. Gabrielle thought about that as she followed him.
Well, I've had worse things thought about me, she commented.
Have you?
Micah gave her a curious look. Gabrielle merely nodded silently.
Anyway,
she exhaled, raking her hair back out of her eyes.
At least this gives us another day.
They turned the corner and started down the winding back passage where the rooms were.
Is she feeling better?
The boy asked.
Yeah, but that leg's worrying me.
Gabrielle shook her head.
I'm glad she's resting, giving a chance to heal.
Mistress, it's a broken bone,
Micah stated.
It will take far longer than one day.
He paused outside their door.
When they started saying there was some trick, I thought maybe she was entering the games to find out that you don't mean she's really, that you're going to truly enter the contest, are you?
Gabrielle smiled briefly.
Come on inside. I know Sina wanted to talk to you.
She turned and pushed the door open.
Be quiet, though. She might have gone back to sleep and I...
The bard was facing him as he entered, and she saw his face as they cleared the door. His jaw dropped and his eyes widened. Gabrielle figured out that whatever her beloved soulmate was doing, it probably wasn't involving sleep. She turned and sighed.
Fish turret.
In the practice area, outlined in the torch's fluttering glare, her partner was standing, completely naked, drenched in sweat, her hands cupped around the hilt of her sword as she went through the advanced drills that blurred the silver blade around her so quickly the eye couldn't follow it. It was magnetic. It was hypnotic. And Gabrielle found herself caught up in the swiftly moving image, her eyes captured by the burnished skin and the wildly flying dark hair and the feral grin flashing towards them. A final twist and leap, and then Sina was turning, moving towards him with her sword resting on her shoulder, a limp barely evident despite her bandaged leg, completely oblivious to Micah's goggled-eyed stare.
Hey,
the warrior drawled.
What took you so long?
Gabrielle licked her lips and managed to tear her eyes from her partner's glistening body.
Z?
Yeah?
The warrior walked over to the table and picked up her sheath, sliding the sword home with a snick. The torchlight floated shadows over her back, outlining the move and shift of her muscles.
Micah, would you...
The boy said at the same time, shoving the basket into Gabrielle's hands and escaping quickly out the door. Sina turned and it slammed behind him.
Damn, wanted to talk to him, she frowned. What's going on?
Gabrielle forced herself to merely reach out one fingertip and remove a droplet of sweat
from between her soulmate's breasts.
Honey?
Hmm? Xena leaned closer and sniffed. Hungry?
Yeah. I'm starving.
Gabriel put the basket down and moved in.
Come here.
Xena gazed in bemusement at her partner's flushed skin. She figured Gabriel would be upset at her for catching her at her drills, and she was pleased, if a little surprised, to find just the opposite.
Want to see what's in the basket? She asked.
No.
Gabriel lazily reached over and pulled the stopper from the bath.
Not until I get you all nice and clean.
Yeah?
Xena allowed herself to be led over to the tub.
Yeah.
Gabriel pulled her head down and kissed her, unable to resist any longer.
Did you find out what's going on?
Later.
But Gabriel...
Shh. Later.
To be continued.
Well, that concludes half of the first half of Chapter 7 of Matter of Pride by Melissa Good, and it is Episode 87 of XNU. I hope everyone's enjoyed the show. As usual, if anybody has any suggestions for music or a dedication or announcement, or if you have a movie review or a book review that you want to send on in, you'd like to hear on the show, please send me an email at xena.uber@gmail.com. Also, please try and put on your thinking caps, because I would really, really appreciate some help with trying to figure out what you, the listener, would like to hear for the 100th episode that's coming up. Now, mind you, we only have 13 more episodes to go, or actually 12, before we reach the 100th episode. And I want it to be something that you, the listeners, would like to hear. So, once again, xena.uber@gmail.com. So, until the next episode, everyone, please take care, enjoy life, and love. Bye-bye.